It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, a new season for The Neo-Futurist was announced this month. The longtime theater company is behind Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, the Chicago staple that holds the record for longest-running stage show in Chicago history. It first took the stage on December 2nd, 1988. The company and the show were the creation of Greg Allen. Allen's busy today making the Too Much Light brand worldwide, with spinoffs in New York, San Francisco, and Montreal. We'll talk about Montreal. It's half Montreal. Just to name a few cities. Greg's one of the great theater treasures here in Chicago, and the theater company continues to do great, creative, diverse work that's recognized by critics and audiences worldwide. Greg Allen is my guest tonight in studio. Greg, thanks for being here.
I'm glad to be here.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, it's interesting to be a founder and to be part of the company. I mean, obviously, you've been there from the beginning, but you're not really involved with the Neo-Futurist.
Yeah, not so much. I pretty much teach classes through the Neo-Futurist and kind of advise them, but kind of have expanded my career elsewhere and really kind of focused more on taking Neo-Futurism, if you want to give me the ism, worldwide and trying to influence theater makers around the world.
When you do that, I mean, obviously the success of Too Much Light, everybody in Chicago knows. I mean, Pete and I were talking about being college kids and coming through. Are you afforded that luxury of everybody knows it's a great product before it comes to another market? So, I mean, so when you started, New York's 12 years, but let's take a San Francisco. I mean, is there already a reputation for the show before it gets there?
Not really. Usually we expand to a new market when we've toured there. So like we toured New York every year for maybe 5 years before we actually opened a branch there. San Francisco, we've been to a number of times.
Right.
And so, you know, there is some word of mouth, even if we've gone pretty much when we've toured ahead of time, because we've toured quite a bit.
Right.
So that kind of plants the seeds.
Why make the move to a San Francisco, to a New York? Because people are interested in it? Because there are people who want to launch theater companies in those towns?
Well, yeah. I mean, usually it comes from a neo-futurist moving to that city who then calls me and says, hey, I really want to start a branch here. So, I mean, it really is someone who has gone through the training and knows the aesthetic and the format and the policies and all that. And through one reason or another winds up wherever they are and decides to start a branch there. So New York was a little different in that it was a venue that called us and said, hey, come be our show in this venue. And then we left that venue after a year anyway. it was a problematic venue out in Brooklyn, which was interesting. But, you know, now we're down in the Village. And
ooh, look at you.
And yeah, yeah.
Just stayed in Brooklyn, huh? You guys could have been the hipster theater company.
I totally thought Brooklyn would work, but that space would not. So so we're very happy at the Crane in Soho, or in the Village. And yeah, it's working out. And doing other shows as well. I mean, always doing other work.
Well, let's talk about your work. I mean, obviously, you know, you've been in this town for decades now doing theater work with Neo-Futurist, but also other places. I mean, you've matured in your career where you're not just part of, you know, doing shows above the funeral home.
Right.
On Ashland. I mean, you're working with the Goodman, the MCA, other places. Talk about where you want to go as a performer.
My goal for this decade of my life, of my career, was really to direct plays I hadn't written and write plays that someone else directed. So to try to, I've always been a theater creator who writes, directs, and performs
Right. Pretty
much his own stuff. I was happy to let the performing part of that go, because I've never been too comfortable, thrilled. It's always been my least favorite part of making theater, is being on stage.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Just not for me, really.
That's so hard to, I mean, I can understand like growing out of it but I mean, when you think of you and the beginnings and the Too Much Light life that was Belmont and Clark or Live Bait or Moving up. I mean, you're the face that's grabbing the number off the clothespin.
Yeah. It was always my least favorite part of it, really. I'm too much of a control nut to really throw myself completely into the craziness of 30 plays in 60 minutes. I mean, I created Too Much Light to train myself to deal with whatever was thrown at me in the moment. And I mean, that was fairly successful. But ultimately, it's the crafting of exactly what I want to say to an audience that always inspires me the most, as opposed to the chaos of being on stage that night.
So for you, I mean, you moved into that direction in your career. You got off stage and you're working behind the scenes or directing.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Right after I stopped performing Too Much Light after 25 years, which is a long time when you think about it, I was part of the playwrights unit at the Goodman, and so commissioned to write a play at the Goodman, commissioned to write a play for DePaul, and then I started directing at the Goodman and other places around town. And so, you know, trying to really my goal at this point in my 50s is to be a regional theater director. And also I was going to these festivals. I was teaching at down in Louisville, Actors Theater of Louisville, I teach at the O'Neill, the National Theater Institute, which hosts the National Playwrights Conference. And I was going to these places and they were all, you know, all hail the playwright. The playwright is everything, the be all and end all of theater art. And I just don't buy that. I think it's like a playwright is a piece of what you do. And so I kept running up against this, oh, well, I'll hail the playwright, you know, whatever they write, they're number one. So if I can't beat them, I'll join them. So I'm trying to become a playwright and trying to compete on a normal playwright's path, and started, with the Goodman Commission and this other commission, I started writing full length plays that had never been produced. Now, every playwright in the country would kick me for saying I've never had a play that hasn't been produced, but I was always producing my own stuff. So
right, right.
And festivals aren't going to accept anything that's been produced before. So finally I had scripts that hadn't been produced. So I sent them out to contests for the first time and basically won them.
I find it hard. I mean, we'll take a break here in just a second, but I find it hard to believe that you're okay with just being the playwright and only the playwright. I mean, I've known you for a couple years now, and I know you to be a control guy, and you like good. But I mean, that's you've taught yourself almost in a way as being the aesthetic of the neo-futurists. Is you guys are you guys, and you create it, you direct it, you put it on stage, you do everything DIY.
Yeah.
So it's got to be tough for you.
Yeah. It's I think the hardest thing is to literally write a play, send it to someone. I mean, actually, a company up in Minnesota is doing one of my plays, and I'm debating whether to go or not because I'm not going to direct it, and I already did direct it, you know, and so it's going to be a shadow of what I want it to be.
Without even seeing it. You already gave it a review.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, well, because I know how I want it to be done,
and I know
it will not be done that way. So it's hard. It's hard.
But that's a big part of theater. I mean, the idea of letting go and almost like letting other people collaborate and be able to put their vision on top of your vision and see what kind of chemistry comes out of it.
Yeah, I let people do that at a distance and then send me the reviews or tell me about it. I don't make me sit in the house and cringe.
Greg Allen's my guest tonight. He's the founder and creator for Neo Futurist Theater Company and as well, Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind. We'll continue our conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. My guest in studio tonight, Greg Allen, the founder and creator of Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind, the Neo Futurist Theater Company here in Chicago. They have a new season that's starting up in the fall, which we'll talk with the Neo Futurists because it really is interesting. I mean, when I think Neo Futurists, I think you, I think Pearson, who was in here, I think Diana Slickman.
Sure.
I know that Rachel's doing some stuff. She's doing the Futurarium that came from the new
Oh, right, movie readings. Yeah.
And I just think about, and I think Dave All, uh-huh. And I think of that crew of really like the late 90s or mid to late 90s crew.
Yeah.
As you know, just the golden age of Chicago theater. I mean, and pretty much none of those actors that I just mentioned are involved in Neo Futurists anymore.
John is going to be coming back, I think, this fall, and still he helped me. John Pearson helped me go out and start the New York Neo Futurists, and helped me go out and start the San Francisco Neo Futurists. So he's
That's
my right hand man.
There you go.
In company creation, yeah.
Well, let's talk about the beginnings of the Neo Futurists. 1988. I mean, we throw that back, but
I was 12.
Yeah, exactly. 12-year-old Greg Allen went to the big bad city that is Chicago. How did you come about to create a theater company in 1988?
Well, I didn't really set out to create a company. I got an offer. I'd worked my way up in Chicago theater by being, you know, a grunt for the bigger theater companies, which at the time were Wisdom Bridge, Remains. Those were the two companies that I really worked for the most as assistant director or what have you. And by making connections at really the highest level of Chicago theater, I got opportunities to perform in and direct and create shows for small companies. So finally I got, I mean, ultimately it seems like finally, I got an opportunity to direct, create a show for Stage Left Theater. And the guy said, kind of, you can do whatever you want to. And I've been kicking around these ideas of Italian futurism and these short plays for a while and kind of developing my own aesthetic. And I said, what if I create a late night show, which in 1988, there was no late night theater.
That's so interesting.
And because Blair Thomas, my friend, had said, you know, in New York, they do theater late. And it's like, really? That's crazy.
Red Moon's Blair Thomas.
Because we're always up and looking for something to do. So why not theater late at night? And so I set out to say, okay, what about we'll start a show at 11:15 at night, and I'll make, you know, I wanted everything about it to sound alternative. So the admission was going to be $1 times whatever you roll on a dice to get in. The subtitle would be 30 plays in 60 minutes. We'd perform them in random order. We'd give the audience a menu with all the plays numbered 1 through 30. You would call out the number of the play you would like to see next. There'd be an onstage darkroom timer counting off 60 minutes. When the buzzer went off, the show was over. Interactive theater. I mean, in those early days when we were at Stage Left, there are a couple elements that I just loved. One is that we brought every audience member on stage at the beginning of the show. Like, they came in the door and we planted them center stage and interviewed them in front of the audience with a microphone. And so just completely turned the tables on the audience members and made them the performers and then sat them down. We also had a storefront window, which looked out much like your lovely window here, Justin, straight onto Clark Street at Belmont. And people were walking by in droves. You know, the Medusa's was a juice bar that was around the corner. Cafe Voltaire was across the street. Right. The Punkin' Donuts was three doors down. So all these people were you know.
It was part of it was a counterculture neighborhood at the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so I would sit there in the window and I'd just freeze, basically. There are different options and a totally different experience as to what I did. If I just was a living mannequin and I just froze, people would go by and it completely flipped people out. They'd look, it's like, is that real? Is that not real? And then the other option is you could freeze but follow them with your eyes, completely freak people out. And then other times I would just like take my dinner in there and I'd just eat in the window, you know? And it caused such a stir by doing something so simple, which really makes sense with what we do in Too Much Light. And with neo-futurism in terms of being yourself anyway, that it was amazing how much attention we got just from doing that. I remember a car pulling up. Well, see, we got lines pretty soon out the door, which mm-hmm. always helped, especially on Clark Street. And, you know, a car pulled up and the window rolled down and Amy Morton said, "What's going on in there?" You know, and I was like, "Oh, it's my show. I'm doing Too Much Light." You know, it just caused a stir and starting at 11:15 at night in a random admission, it was cheap. And, you know, it just took off and appealed to young people, which, you know,
that's a big part of it. I mean, talk about Belmont and Clark and what that was like in the late 80s. Cause we hear a lot about it and people know it now. And it's still I mean, obviously you've seen a lot of change in the last 2-3 years. Even the alley is gone.
But, oh, is it gone?
It's gone. But they're making the huge. There's a huge condo building where the Punkin' Donuts is.
Oh yeah,
and they're making that huge. Yeah, thing. Yeah. But I mean, tell us about 1988 in Chicago theater.
You know, the company I left out of my list of the companies I'd worked with was the Organic, which also had a long history with Stuart Gordon, who went on to make Reanimator in Hollywood and all these horror films. You know, that theater, the Organic, was across the street and two blocks north of there. And Medusa's was really, you know, was an underage,
all ages club.
Right, and right. So everyone who was under 21 would go to Medusa's. And the Dunkin' Donuts was on the corner and all these punks hung out at the Dunkin' Donuts, hence the Punkin' Donuts. And so we were definitely the symbol of the counterculture. And the amazing thing was kids would drive in from these distant suburbs who were, you know, young punks and probably like the only young punk in Elk Grove Village or whatever, and drive in to see the show. And then, you know, it was just by word of mouth. We never had any advertising. Yes. We never bought into any of that. It was just like people came, saw the show. I'd say to the audience, I'll talk to you before, during, and after the show. And I literally met every single person who came through that door. I struck up a conversation with, and through that connection, there was a personal feel of what theater and who these artists were that people wanted to come back. It was like throwing a party every night.
You know, it's interesting because for the last more recent time, even before the changes of that neighborhood, there still were a lot of punks that would come down to that area and kind of have nothing to do.
Right.
They just hang out. And maybe there is some you know, historical perspective to think about that siblings and friends and generations before came down to come to places like Too Much Light or other things that were there, Cafe Voltaire, other shows that they could see, Medusa's, and it's not there anymore. So so what we see is the big loiter. But at the time, there were things for them to do.
Absolutely. And the annoyance was not far away, and people flocked to that. And, you know, it was really a great time to be doing Chicago theater. And I mean, the other companies that literally started at the same time, Curious Theater, Theater Oobleck, Looking Glass started that year. I think Straw Dog started the same year. I mean, it's amazing how many companies that are still with us started in 88.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think one time, like the late 80s, grabbed so many artists to come in and start a company that have had such lasting impact on Chicago?
Well, one of the things I always tell people of why, you know, people ask me, you know, how Chicago is a theater town. I think it's still true is that Chicago is large enough to support a very large theater community, but at the same time is still affordable enough so that people can come in and not starve to death and still be able to be artists. I mean, I had a bookstore job for 7 years and worked in a cafe and made $10,000 a year for a decade while I started my theater company, you know, and because it didn't take very much money. And maybe today that translates to maybe $20,000. But you can survive here. New York, there's no way you can possibly get by on that. Whereas here, you could, you know, especially when you're young, you can hold down a full-time job during the day and then do theater at night.
That really is what makes a great theater community, because there is an opportunity to take risk, be creative, because you can do it on a shoestring budget.
Yeah, you don't. I mean, we literally had no budget. We had no budget for Too Much Light. Because it was just bodies on stage with hand props. I mean, that's it. It was just creativity.
And that's what you mean by neo-futurism. When you talk about the concept, and you mentioned it a couple times, the aesthetic of neo-futurism, explain real quick the elevator pitch on neo-futurism.
Basically, neo-futurism embraces the actuality of who we are, where we are, when we are, so that all the performers are themselves on stage. It's an interactive experience with the audience that can only take place once. We embrace the ephemeral nature of theater. And so it's also a living newspaper where we're holding forth on our own experiences and whatever's going on in the world immediately, right then and there at that time.
So you're not going to pull like number 19 and it's going to be two wigs and a 1920s. No.
And I mean, basically,
hello,
it's,
governor.
Yeah,
no, you're not going to get that kind of theater at the New York.
No, not at all. I kind of say it's documentary theater. It's nonfiction theater. It's non-illusory theater. We don't pretend. You know, a lot of people go, how can you do theater and not pretend? Well, if you see any of my neo-future shows, you'll find out. I mean, we just it's more of a petri dish, a social experiment, an anthropological experiment in who we are, where we are right now.
Greg Allen is the founder of the Neo-Futurists, and he's also the creator of Too Much Light Makes Baby Go Blind, which is on stage at the Neo-Futurists in Andersonville, Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays. We'll continue our conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. This is Download here on WGN Radio. Justin Coffin, my guest, Greg Allen, the creator of Too Much Light Makes Baby Go Blind, the longest running stage show in Chicago history.
Mm-hmm.
also the Neo-Futurist Company, also in New York, San Francisco, Montreal. I said at the beginning, half Montreal. Why
half Montreal? They call themselves Les Neo. Well, it's Montreal, right? So they speak French. So they're a Francophone company, and they call themselves Les Neos. And they never did Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, per se. They took my teachings of Neo-Futurism and created other shows were short pieces done in random order. So they did, and they don't have an ongoing 50 weeks of performances, and have done a bunch of great, really, really amazing stuff. So I just brought one of Les Neos down to do my last show at Mariachi, which was great fun. There was a play by Ibsen called Ghosts, and in the play, there's a maid who's supposedly learning French because the man she's in love with at one point alluded to going to Paris. So in the original play, she's like learning French. So I brought down a native French speaker to play the part. And she was kind of the host for the whole show and welcomed everyone as they came into the show and sat them all down and gave them programs all in French, completely in French. And they would talk to her and she would only respond in French. And so it totally threw the audience off from the very get-go, brought them into this really charming but slightly off environment.
Well, I mean, you just mentioned about how you eat your dinner in a storefront on Clark Street.
Yeah.
There's something about, it's not the right way to say putting off, but to put an audience out of their comfort zone when they walk in the
counteract their expectations. Absolutely. I think one of the inspirations for creating Neo-Futurism and Too Much Light was really to observing that the world was way too comfortable and that we had expectations that were throwing us off, or I certainly had expectations of what would happen that were throwing me off, and I wasn't very good about responding. And so I really wanted to shake people up and totally surprise them and have them have no idea what was coming next. So we perform the show in random order. You get a random admission, you get a random name tag, all these things. But at the same time, you know, the material itself is changing every single week, and you think it's going to be a funny show. Well, it's actually quite serious. I mean, there are plays that are very serious. There are plays that are very funny. There are abstract plays. There's political stuff.
Great thing about the Neo-Futurist, at the end of a weekend, you're going to roll the dice on how many plays you're going to replace and write new.
Right.
And that dice can roll at, you know, and be a high number, six or whatever it is, and you'd be like, ah, geez, we got to write six new bits.
The experience is constantly coming at you and you really don't know what to expect. I mean, which is one of the challenges. Then, of course, you run Too Much Light for 28 years, you know, and it's like people come there with certain expectations. Right. So there are certain rituals that have lasted from almost day one, like the rolling of the die, the name tag, that I would love to subvert and get rid of and just, you know.
You can't, right?
Because people are like, oh, where's the die? You know, they latch on to the... I've always wanted one evening just to have people come in, and they just come in. They don't get name tags. They just come in and sit in the audience. There's one number on the clothesline. Someone jumps up, pulls it down, says, you know, Miss Julie by August Strindberg. And then we just do that play in front of that audience that's expecting.
Why can't you do it?
I've always wanted to do this too. Just switch theaters with another show. So for one night only, I've always wanted to do an April Fool's show, which we've never quite. People are chicken. People are scared. But
who's scared? The companies?
I'm much more adventurous than my own company. That's just the deal. So I've always wanted to switch the, like, get another company to come in. There are all sorts of experiments I've always wanted
to do. I mean, one of the things I find fascinating about that, I mean, is you're essentially shifting the expectations of someone who's coming in the door.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, creating them. I mean, in the way that, you know, you shifted it so much that it's become not mainstream, but household.
Or tradition.
Tradition, yeah.
Yeah.
And as a performer who knows that works, is it...
That's why I've always, I mean... After the first couple of years, my focus was not Too Much Light. I mean, it was really, I mean, I've created 28 other shows for the Neo-Futurists and another 28 shows around town and around the country. And it's always the new project that I am embarking on, something I've never done before. It's like, gee, I've never created a full-length dance piece with no text. I've never created a puppet show. I've never done a solo performance piece that's fully audience interactive with no script. Immersive theater. I did a couple early immersive theaters before there was the word immersive theater. I really am always trying to do something I've never done before, and that's always been the most exciting thing.
Is that the motivation as your career evolves? Is the motivation, is the what pushes you forward, the idea of doing something new, doing something you've never done before?
I mean, I've always been able to do that. I've always been incredibly lucky that people give me opportunities to take. I've never really had to sell myself. I've never had a resume or a picture or headshot, any of that stuff. People have just kind of said, hey, come create a show for
us. Right.
What do you want to do? And I've always got a long laundry list of shows. It's like, well, I've never done that before. That would be pretty exciting. Or I don't understand that. So that's a perfect reason to do a show. You know, at the Goodman at one point, Bob Falls asked me to take part in the giant international Eugene O'Neill Festival there. And he said, you know, Greg, you know, create a show. And he was thinking I would do, I did a show called The Last 2 Minutes of the Complete Works of Henrik Ibsen, or Complete Lost Works of Samuel Beckett as found in an envelope partially burned in a dustbin in Paris, labeled never to be performed, never, ever, ever, or I'll sue from the grave. Kind of these comprehensive shows, and he thought I would screw around with O'Neill. And so I came back and I said, you know, Bob, what I'd really like to do is Strange Interlude, which is a 9-act, 350-page, 7-hour play at the Goodman. And he said, wow, I love Strange Interlude, but you'll cut it down to about 2 hours, right? And I said, yeah, sure, I'll cut it down to about 2 hours. And then he kind of got cold feet at one point and called me back into his office and I'm not sure about Strange Interlude. And I said, no, Strange Interlude is incredible. And the whole thing, we should make the whole thing happen. So we did a 7-hour production of the entirety of Strange Interlude, where I added the stage directions, the character descriptions, the adverbial directives that O'Neill puts in front of each of his lines because he hates actors and doesn't trust them. And so, I really put more of Strange Interlude on stage than has ever been put on stage. And I would say in that way, it was more faithful. But at the same time, it kind of made fun of some of the things O'Neill was doing and got hecklers at the Goodman.
Really?
Which was exciting.
Well, I mean, I guess your work has always been that. I don't want to say it's contrary because it's clever and it's unique. I mean, you're not really playing off anything, but there always has been a streak of the neo-futurists in the work that you guys do that you are playing to the height of the intelligence. That there are some things that I don't want to say are beneath you, but you're taking shots at works. And there's love of the playwright, but there's also kind of like, what they did wrong.
I think it comes from a real reverence. I mean, I do think it's an amazing play, Strange Interlude, amazingly and bizarre and preposterous. And I love the work of Samuel Beckett, but I created this show with Danny Thompson and Ben Schneider that we've had 11 international tours with it. Or 11 international productions, I should say, that makes fun of Beckett, but at the same time totally loves and reveres Beckett. And so I think people come to my shows and they don't necessarily know what they're in for. Because like when I just did Ibsen's Ghosts at Mary Archie, it was a laugh riot for about an hour and a half. And then it got super Ibsen-y and I punched them in the gut and it everyone was crying. So, I mean, I love playing with that tone. I love the clash of opposing emotions.
I love the energy of the unknown as a theater goer. I want to know that I feel like, and why I've gravitated towards neo-futurist work in the past is that you don't know what's coming next. And as you mentioned before, just about expectations, but that's not for everybody. There's probably someone listening right now that's like, I don't want to be toyed with. I don't want to be messed with. I don't want just one play. If I come to see 30 plays in 60 minutes.
I should clarify, it's audience interactive theater. And so people go, oh, they bring us up on stage and humiliate us. And we never, ever do that. No. It's very much coming from perspective of that we treat people as we want to be treated. We treat the audience as equal or superior to ourselves. And that really is the aesthetic. So, you know, it isn't this kind of horrible, put someone on the spot, humiliate them kind of stuff. And I don't, I mean, I think I have a kind of a passive aggressive stance towards my audiences where I lure them in and entertain them, but at the same time, really challenge them and make them think. So
Greg Allen's the founder and creator of the Neo Futurists and Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. I'd love to get your take on how you start a theater company like the Neo Futurist today in Chicago 2016. What would have to be in place for another company to come up and do what you've done here in Chicago? Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 10 o'clock, the worst. 312-981-7200. This is the segment, the weekly segment, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes.
Wow.
Yeah. You can get a pillow.
A pillow?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not kidding. You can get a gift card to a pizza place, a pillow, and a pair of tickets to Air Supply.
What's better than that?
And people text in and they tell us what's the worst. And two comedians are in studio with us tonight, TJ Jagodowski and Abby McEnany. I mean, come on, you can't get any better. And it's a lot of fun, and it's coming up here at 10.
It's a rough week for that.
It is a rough week. Well, there's a lot of real worsts.
Yeah.
You get a lot of people who will be like, here's the worst. You're like, well, we're not going to go with that.
Yeah,
we'll go with traffic.
Okay.
Give us something about someone who doesn't turn off their signal.
Yeah.
And then we'll get that. So Greg Allen's in studio with me. He's the founder and creator of the Neo Futurists and Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind. You know, as I think about, I kind of teased right before the break about the concept of starting a neo-futurist in 2016. Mm-hmm. You're obviously doing that by going to different cities. But here in Chicago, how would one do that? I mean, you know, I think about the Chicago theater scene. There's a lot of stuff that's up and coming and it's bubbling up, and there'll be a lot of young companies. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking for the next generation of neo-futurists, a different theater company that's going to come up and do the kind of things we've been talking about in this hour.
I teach company creation to the MFAs at DePaul, and the number one thing I really emphasize is asking yourself, what is theater and what is your unique vision of theater that does not exist already? Every single company has to have a very vivid mission that is unlike anything else out there. And so I really try to encourage people to write manifestos and dig deep in terms of how do I see the world? How am I a theater artist? And what do I have to say to the world? And how do I quintessentially create that would completely express what I'm trying to get
And that's really
across.
What it's all about what you want to say to the world.
Yep, absolutely. People who say, oh, I love this play. Let's create a theater company to do this play. And it's like, yeah, that's not a good enough reason. You know, a good play or a role you've always wanted, not a good reason to create a theater
and
company.
And I mean, we've had conversations, whether it be with musicians or comedians or, you know, even politicians or, you know, people in theater. And it's all the same. I mean, what is your voice? What do you want to say in this world?
Yep.
And you have to sort of think about that before you enter the marketplace and whatever that marketplace is.
Yeah, absolutely. So I, at DePaul and when I'm starting these companies, I really go back to the basics in my classes. Also, I really start with, what sets theater apart from all other art forms? And, you know, and ultimately people come up with the same answers I came up with at 26. And I say, okay, so let's create a company that does that. And I think neo-futurism really embraces a lot of things that are unique to theater that still are seen as revolutionary, which is crazy. I was just teaching a class of 25 theater teachers in New York. They brought me out to teach these other teachers. And I introduced them to my theories of performance. And the teachers were like, well, we can't do that in class. We couldn't do that. Why not? Well, it's way too dangerous. It's just, I mean, asking people about their own lives, that's just too dangerous.
What do they mean by too dangerous?
Well, yeah, you know, they were scared of the chaos of truth, basically. They were scared that all sorts of things would bubble up out of these kids that they'd have to deal with. Well, welcome to my world. I mean, I teach neo-futurism all over the country, and my classes, we laugh and we cry for hours.
But there's something to that. I mean, the idea that as the world gets more complicated, I
Absolutely.
Guess, and chaotic.
Look at what's going on in the world. Everybody needs a voice. And neo-futurism gives people their immediate voice of their personal experience on stage.
For you, I mean, obviously your involvement with writing plays here in Chicago right now and what you're doing with Goodman, MCA, but you know, puppet shows you got coming up, and also the work with Neo Futurist. You know, you've got a particular vantage point to be able to sort of look at the state of theater. I mean, are people coming in? Are they creating new voices? Are we feeling that same energy as, say, 1988 when you guys started?
I mean, I think the great thing, if you look at the companies that started in the late 80s, were people who were writing, directing, performing their own stuff. They were very much devising their own work before the word devising was out there. And, you know, I am not as aware, and maybe I'm not as aware as I should be of the young up-and-coming companies in Chicago, but I'm not as aware of as many companies that are creating their own pieces to put up, that instead they're grabbing this play from that playwright, and
right.
This New York show did that, and so we're doing that. And I really think, at least in the late 80s and the 90s, it was all about companies that were creating their own work.
And I'd also say creating not only your own work and your own vision, but your own style.
Yeah.
In the way that the Too Much Light show, which still to this day survives and thrives and is a hit and is the longest running show in Chicago history for a reason. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit in any category. It's not necessarily a show you'd see at the Goodman, and it's not sketch comedy. You know what I mean?
No.
It's
very unique. And
it's a unique show.
Very proud of that. Is that people who come to the show? You know, I think of young people who say, "Well, should we go to a bar? Should we see a movie? Should we go bowling? Or should we see Too Much Light?" You know, it's not, "Gee, let's go to the theater tonight. What should we go see?" Too Much Light is such a unique beast. It's like Blue Man or whatever people, you know, it's a very specific flavor. And it's kind of frustrating for me is that I've always wanted Too Much Light to be thought of at least within the same realm of theater, but it seems like such an outlier that, it really is a unique experience.
Well, it goes back to its roots. I mean, you're in the counterculture capital of the city and in the neighborhood of Belmont and Clark. I mean, it almost was born of the idea of being something different.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, yeah, the audience has gotten much more mainstream over the years, which is interesting.
Really?
Those early years, it was punks. I mean, it was really the outcasts of society were coming to Too Much Light. And, you know, I could very much identify with them. And it's interesting to watch the audience kind of change over time and become more mainstreamed.
You know, for you and your relationship with the theater company, I mean, obviously, as a founder and a creator of these shows and to not be involved in it, is it challenging for you? Is it emotionally challenging to not have that kind of counterculture vibe that we've just been talking about?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I've got all these other shows going on. I don't really stop and look back and say that. It does make me incredibly proud that there are, you know, three, four companies in North America that are promulgating my aesthetic of what theater should be, without me having much to do with them. I just went out to the San Francisco company and, you know, I hadn't been there in way too long. I hadn't been there in like 2 years, I realized, to check in with them and meet all the new ensemble members. And, you know, there they were working away and they're all speaking the same language that I created 25 years ago. And we all, you know, we all spoke the same thing. We all knew what was going on. And there was just kind of this room that kind of looked like a theater, kind of didn't. And I was like, oh, I don't know about how this is going to work. And then, you know, the lights went off and the audience piled in and it's like, it's Too Much Light. And here it is. And it's happening. And it was amazing. And it was a great show, you know, and here are these young 20 somethings that I've never met before, basically fulfilling my ideal of what theater is. And so more power to them and more companies to come. That's the really, I've always, my role as founding director of the Neo Futurists is utter world domination. And so, so that's really what I'm shooting for.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. That's utter the world goal. Domination. There's nothing hard with that.
No.
That's realistic.
It's very realistic.
Yeah.
Life in theater. I mean, you just got a lot. You got a lot left. Obviously, with your work that you're doing at other theater companies in Chicago. But when you think about it, I mean, you have really dedicated your life to the stage, to the art form, to this form of creativity. Do you see it? Could you see it any other way?
I very easily could never have happened. I mean, I was not a theater kid at all. I wasn't someone who was, you know, in the musicals in high school. I never crossed my mind to get near a stage in high school. I was a photographer, you know. I was a kid who worked in the dark and made films and you know, had developer on my fingers. And it was from my interest in photography that led to film, that led to theater, as that turned around. But I didn't memorize a line until I was halfway through college. So, you know, I was thought, when all this theater stuff dries up, I'll go back to photography. But I guess I've kind of hung that up. I've hung that up, which is sad. Now it makes me sad.
Right, if you went back to it, you'd be like, oh, this is all digital now?
I know. It's totally ruined. It's completely ruined.
No dark room?
Yeah.
All right, great.
So, and people say, you know, you should go into film because you're such a film guy. And it's like, yeah, I'm a film fan. But like the distance and the time and the... I wouldn't be psyched with... I love the veracity, the immediacy of theater. And that's really my art form.
Greg Allen is the founder and creator of the Neofuturists and Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind. You can see it Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays at the Neofuturarium, which is up at Ashland and Foster in the Andersonville neighborhood. Also, if you're in New York, go to the Village. If you're in San Francisco, somewhere in San Francisco downtown. Sometimes at Les Neos in Montreal.
Yep.
You can see it all over the place. Touring. Greg Allen, great to talk to you. Good to see you, man.
Thanks for having me.